Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, it is Thursday, December 14th, 2017. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along for a conversation about some history at the North Carolina General Assembly, maybe some bill drafting, best stories from the floor, might even talk some train schedules or other encyclopedic knowledge. And with that word, encyclopedic, I'm sure some listeners are already going, could it be Jerry Cohen on the line? And indeed it is, the longtime staff member from the North Carolina legislature, policy expert, special counsel for a long time, Jerry Cohen, who retired in 2014, joins us here on the podcast. Jerry, thanks for being part of the conversation.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff.
I want to start with just a little bit of news this week, a broad discussion, debate, conversation, push, call it what you will, going on about judicial reform. That's something that obviously you've had plenty of experience with going back 40 plus years. Just tell me a little bit about, you gave some testimony this week. You have some concerns about judicial redistricting reform.
Sure. And my testimony was actually just before Thanksgiving at the previous meeting. I highlighted a couple of constitutional issues. One of the things the House passed judicial redistricting bill did is in some smaller counties divided up so that although maybe a three-county area had five judges, one of the judges had to live in a particular county, although all voters in maybe all three counties voted on them and identified a state constitutional issue that basically says that there has to be a connection between being eligible to vote and being eligible to run, that the legislature, when setting up districts, can't add an additional qualification, which the House bill did by saying you had to live in a particular county. Now, that's the same kind of system that the Wake County Commissioners and Durham City Council have, and they may have the same infirmity, but I was asked to talk about using that extensively in the proposed judicial redistricting. My understanding, I believe that the Senate version that was rolled out this week, the week of December 12th, does not have that anymore. But it does continue to divide up the urban counties into actual electoral districts where only the people who live in the district vote on that seat.
So the judicial redistricting conversation has been going on for a while. You gave testimony last month prior to Thanksgiving, and then this week, as you mentioned, this development on the Senate side. This strikes me as a pretty good example of politics and policy really intersecting. I guess take us behind the curtain, if you will. As somebody who's been on the bill drafting side, is that an interesting moment? Is that, I mean, because I think by and large, from my conversations with folks, people have said judicial reform changes are needed in the state. They're long overdue. But it's also obviously become a political issue with the consternation between the legislature and the executive mansion. Is it fun from your perspective, or is it particularly taxing or stressful when you get a policy issue that really also becomes a political debate as well?
Sure. Well, I got assigned to work on judicial redistricting first in 1988. The U.S. Supreme Court had just struck down at-large legislative elections in most of North Carolina's urban counties, Wake, Durham, Orange, Forsyth, Cumberland, Mecklenburg, as having at-large legislative elections that made it, certainly at the time, based on 1980s voting patterns, made it very difficult to elect black members to the legislature. Well, about 3 weeks after the Supreme Court ruling, the Black Lawyers Association brought suit against the judicial redistricting, which had at-large judges being elected for Superior Court in all the urban counties, and the legislature reached a settlement and districted most of our urban counties into districts where only the people in the district vote. And at the time, the populations were balanced. But over time, as especially the suburban areas in those counties like Mecklenburg and Wake grew at a much faster rate than the more heavily minority areas, it began to get out of balance. So one of the things, and a lawsuit in Wake County resolved that about 3 years ago. In Mecklenburg, it was out of balance by about a 5 or 6 to 1 ratio. So this bill corrects that. Now, a lot of what the Senate and House passed bills replicate that into district court, and there have been allegations that, based on the pattern of where judges are, that black judges are much more likely under this plan to be put in the same district as other judges than white judges. Now, I haven't had a chance to look at the Senate plan, but the House plan might have had some Voting Rights Act concerns if the solutions more heavily were negative on black judges than white judges. But so that's some potential litigation coming up, at least under the House bill.
From a policy standpoint, would you venture to put a toe in the water? Do you have a thought on what would be good reform, good change for the, I'm not talking about the political side of it, but the policy side, for the people of North Carolina, for the judiciary? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a state, Connecticut. I came to Chapel Hill to go to college in the 60s, where judges were appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. So when I came to North Carolina, I was sort of surprised that judges were elected. And I've lived in Wake County the last 35 years, and Wake County has like 21 district court judges, and which means every 2 years, 10 or 11 are on the ballot. And I think it's very difficult for voters, especially in those areas, to identify anything about the candidates. I've been an attorney for 45 years, lived in Wake County 30 years, and last year there were like 11 district court judges on the ballot in Wake County, and I'd only heard of three of them. And if I don't know any of them, then I suspect that your average lay citizen may know none of them. So it winds up being party identification. And it winds up with very, very long ballots. So, you know, personally, the current system of electing judges is for voters close to being a joke. Now, I'm not talking about statewide elections for like Supreme Court and Court of Appeals where it's high profile. I'm talking about superior and district court judge elections. So we have a tension between voters being able to choose judges that will sit in judgment on them and the fact that the system makes it very difficult for the voters to actually know anything with very long ballots with minimal information. And I think that for those races, most voters get their information from, frankly, from slate cards handed out by poll workers for both parties, because while we've gone back and forth on whether party affiliation will appear on the ballot or whether there will be primaries, in fact, in practice, the electoral system tends to be very highly partisan, with parties endorsing judicial candidates of their party and pushing that information out to voters.
You mentioned you are an attorney. I believe presently still, last couple of years, have been a lobbyist down at the legislature. You've worked in bill drafting. You were special counsel for the legislature. Do you have a favorite role that you've filled among the various ones that you have?
Well, I enjoyed especially working on local kind of issues, and sometimes it was not directly related. I think the most fun project I had was being assigned to work on the Durham City-County School merger in, pretty sure it was 1991 or 92, when Bill Bell, who at the time was chairman of the Durham County Board of Commissioners, and after that, up until last week, was mayor of the city of Durham for 16 years, called me and asked me to come in and work on a solution because everyone locally was at loggerheads, the city and county school board members. And I came into Durham with no preconceived notion and came up with a redistricting plan. I think I had a listening post session for people to come into the courthouse and offer suggestions. And that current system is the one that was adopted and is currently in use in Durham with an at-large seat and six different sort of overlay districts that wound up going to the U.S. Court of Appeals where it was upheld. So that was a project where I thought I used skills sort of as a mediator to try to understand all the sides and come up with a solution. I was actually quite surprised that it was adopted unanimously. Sometimes problems need somebody from the outside to come in and look at it because people inside have too many preconceived notions. I've lived in Orange and Wake counties, but not in Durham.
Is there another policy issue that comes to mind that you're particularly proud of that you worked on?
I enjoyed working on redistricting over the years. I started in 84 and worked on it through the 80s and 90s cycles, a little bit in 2001 and 2002. And I enjoyed the sort of map making. I've always had a good sense of looking at maps and schedules, knowing where precincts are and where communities are and trying to work on plans. Now, of course, sometimes the public doesn't like the solution there. I mean, there's a lot of problems with districting from both parties historically. I don't think anyone's innocent here.
Right. No, that's a fair assessment from my position. You spent a lot of time on Jones Street. I'd love to hear a couple of stories, favorite moments within the building, favorite stories, favorite floor debates. What comes? I'm sure you've gotten that question before, right? But what comes to top of mind for you?
Well, I enjoyed the sort of legislative reform process. I started working at the legislature in 1977 and worked 37 years, but I actually started hanging around the 1971 session when I was in grad school at Chapel Hill working on my master's degree, and which I did before going to law school. And I enjoyed the sort of process of watching how the legislative process worked. That was sort of my career interest, looking at the legislative process. So I enjoyed watching debates and rules and being consulted by both sides on how the rules worked and how they didn't. Over time, sometimes some of the rules became ignored by the majority party, which was different over the time when it became convenient. Jim Black was probably the first example of that, but more recently, I think we've seen that as well, where especially committee substitutes will come in at the last minute that bear no relation to the original bill and get pushed through at the last minute. North Carolina is one of only four states that don't require bills to deal with one subject. North Carolina, you can have these omnibus bills with all sorts of things thrown together. And there's only three or four states that even allow that. Most state constitutions require bills to deal with only one subject. It's putting everything together in the academic side is called log rolling, where you put one log in and you wind up at the other end with hundreds of logs.
And if you come down to the legislature at the right time, you might think you've got a bunch of lumberjacks on hand because plenty of stuff gets rolled into legislation. That happens, to your point, on the R side these days, but certainly on the D side going back decades and decades. Guest here on the WNC Politics Podcast is Jerry Cohen. He's a former Chapel Hill Town Council member. That's a little bit ago. Since then, he has spent a lot of time in the General Assembly working as a legislative staffer, an attorney, a bill drafter. He retired in 2014. He's here on the Politics Podcast talking about some of his memories, some of the experiences he had. I read a story about a floor debate involving the Jewish holiday Yom Kippur. And I'm wondering if you'll just recount and share that for us.
Well, that would have been sometime in the 80s. North Carolina has a set of state holidays in statute that really don't mean much of anything. It used to be that if it was a state holiday, then any court process due that day could be turned in the following day, but courthouses weren't really closed. We had a list of 40 holidays. Besides the important ones, there was, you know, at the time, Lincoln's birthday, Jefferson Davis's birthday. I think that's still in there, along with the larger holidays, Labor Day, Christmas, New Year's, etc. And Representative Ted Kaplan, who was a state House member at the time, later a state senator, and now he's a member of the Forsyth County Board of Commissioners. Ted's hung in there in elective office, introduced a bill to make Yom Kippur, which is the Jewish Day of Atonement, a state holiday in North Carolina. And he had the bill on the floor, and Representative Foyle Hightower from Anson County, who I think asked a lot of questions that needed to be asked. Some people thought he was dull. I actually thought he was smart because he asked questions that other people were afraid to ask but needed to be asked. Mm-hmm. But Foyle on the floor, and I don't think this was prearranged. I was on the floor, but Foyle stood up when the bill was being debated and said, "I want to know, was Yom Kippur a Democrat or a Republican?"
Oh, man. What was the response to that?
I think there was a lot of laughter.
Yeah. That's good.
That's good to remember that story. I hadn't thought about it in a long time.
Yeah.
And the bill did pass.
Good, I think. that's pretty good. What misconceptions are there about the legislature, about the General Assembly? From people that are outside the building?
I think there's a misconception that people can't have any influence in the process. I think that getting involved through working for members, whether it's an election campaign or following legislation and presenting comments on much of legislation, maybe 95% of it, I think public input is welcome. Some issues become hyper-partisan, though, and it becomes hard to participate if members have preconceived notions.
I've heard several people describe your memory, the way your brain works, as encyclopedic. I guess two-part question. One, is that fair? And two, if so, what are you most encyclopedic about?
Well, I've always had a good head about remembering lots of information. You know, some have said that if you gave me a checklist for Asperger's syndrome, that I could check off 12 of the 13 boxes. And some of the capabilities that, including memorizing train and bus schedules, remembering phone numbers, remembering statute numbers, you know, people, what are all the islands in the Indian Ocean, you know, obscure knowledge, which in legislation can be very helpful if you remember history and statutes and numbers and how to find things. On the other hand, that skill does not include remembering what color your socks are today.
Train and bus schedules. You grew up in Connecticut. I mean, can you in your head? Well, let me ask you, do you have a photographic memory?
Pretty much so, yes. Remembering the names of trains and when they departed and where all the stops were. I think I still remember all the stops from Hartford to New Haven on the old New Haven Railroad. I do a lot of cross-country train trips and have a good sense of geography and schedules. And if you're in an airport, when the backup flights are. But sometimes that can be a curse.
How so?
Just sort of, you know, remembering old telephone numbers. Sometimes there can be, you can have too much information.
Sure, sure.
I've always enjoyed being able to remember laws and bills from 30 or 40 years back, or issue papers, or obscure details of my master's thesis.
Are there any obscure, I'm fixated for whatever reason on train schedules or public transit systems at the moment.
Well, I got involved in politics when I was in high school, when I worked in a presidential campaign as a volunteer, and then came to Chapel Hill and was elected to town council when I was in law school, which is very unusual for a student to be elected to office. There's, I think, only been two in Chapel Hill, at least in the last 75 years and probably forever. So I ran for office four times, won twice, lost twice, and then got out of that business and started working for the legislature.
Do you have a favorite train? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask.
Train.
Yeah, do you have a favorite, I guess I'll give you a favorite train system, train stop, or train map? I mean, do any of those, are you particularly passionate about any one of those three?
Well, I've enjoyed taking transcontinental trains. I've taken all of the east, west, and north, south long distance train routes, Seattle to Los Angeles, Seattle to Chicago, LA to Chicago.
I've done the drive from Seattle down to San Francisco. That's one of the most beautiful.
Well, the train's beautiful. You know, you wake up in Northern California with snow on the ground in April, or you hug the coast for, 30 or 40 miles north of Los Angeles. And I've enjoyed train travel because it's out of the way, where the travel is the destination, not really going from one place to another. Fly out to LA, spend two or three days there, and then leisurely take the train back three or four or five days to get back to North Carolina.
You grew up in Connecticut. You went to Carolina. You got your JD at Carolina. Did you also do undergrad at Carolina?
Yes, I did undergrad, master's degree in political science also, and a law degree. I have half of a second master's degree, but I dropped that off my bucket list.
It's half more than I do. So you are a basketball fan, yes? Or no?
Yes. Okay. I grew up in Connecticut. My father had season tickets. My father went to school at Carolina also before World War II, and I grew up going to University of Connecticut basketball games and then following Carolina basketball once I got here, plus have season tickets to the Carolina Hurricanes. I've had that for 20 years as well, 18 years.
I'm thinking maybe unfairly about arenas, almost loosely analogously to train stations or just these hubs, these places that do exist all over the country. Do you have a favorite arena, whether that's a stale professional hockey arena or maybe a slightly more personality-filled college basketball arena? Do you have a favorite venue to watch sports?
Well, I'm in the PNC Arena a lot. Smith Center is a little cramped for me. I like the Verizon Center in D.C. or whatever they're calling it these days. I can't keep up with arena names.
I call it the phone booth.
Probably change name again. Yeah, phone booth, yeah. Right.
Also wanted to ask you about news consumption. Where do you go for your news, whether it's local or national, written, web, television, radio? No right or wrong answers, obviously.
Well, I still get the print News and Observer to my door. I've subscribed to that since, I think, 1971. I'll read the Wall Street Journal. I get trial subscriptions to various papers and drop them when the trial period's up, so I've periodically gotten the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, read news on Facebook and Twitter as well, listen to the radio, especially for local news.
You're pretty active, I would say, on Twitter. Twitter, obviously, is a new implementation for all of us, but you worked for a long time. I remember a period where this social media dynamic was not part of the political snapshot. How do you like social media? Do you think it lends itself to the conversation? Is it a detriment to, you know, good dialogue? How do you weigh in on Twitter?
I enjoyed reading and getting news, sharing information. You know, I like to share information about factual issues as opposed to taking a side in a political issue. Right now, I'm currently not active as a lobbyist currently, although I don't know in the future if an opportunity came along, I might be interested again. But, you know, I retired for a couple of months in 2014 and again starting December 1st. So I'm enjoying not doing as much, but don't know if that'll be permanent.
Last one, I think, from me. Anything that you've done in retirement in these last 3 years or so that just surprised you, whether it was a garden or a trip to X or Y, or I don't know. Have you done anything new that you didn't foresee yourself doing a few years back?
Well, I've traveled to England twice. My daughter-in-law is a combination med student at Carolina and a grad student at Cambridge in England. So I've gone over to England a couple of times and enjoyed learning about the UK. And I like visiting Chapel Hill. I have a first cousin in Carborough as well. So I try to keep up with local stuff. I enjoy local politics, elections, working on polling places, early voting schedules. Try to have sort of a head for what's the most useful thing for the voter, which may not be the same thing as the most useful thing for either political party.
Which, of course, is pretty important. In politics, there are the faces and the names that we hear about and we read all the time. Then there are the people behind the scenes who, without them, the whole system, I don't think, would be able to go forward. And you are certainly one of those folks. We hear a lot about public service, and some of those people are elected and well-known, or kind of well-known, and some of those people are not as well-known. And you are one of those people that has allowed politics and policy in North Carolina to move forward for 40 years. Professor Emeritus, I saw a couple folks on Twitter have referred to you as Professor Emeritus of the North Carolina.
I think
do you like that?
Yeah, I think Fred Woodcox did that. Oh, and the last thing, the other thing that's always interested me, you mentioned, is public transit. And when I was on the Chapel Hill Town Council, actually ran in 73, along with others on getting a bus system started, which we did in Chapel Hill. Howard Lee deserves most of the credit, but I was on the council at that time. We got Chapel Hill Transit started. I worked on Carborough's bus referendum in 1980 and the Wake, Durham, and Orange referendums this decade. And so I look forward to seeing more implementation of regional transit in the Triangle and more bus service for riders who need the service.
Jerry, thank you for coming
on
the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks.
And thanks to you for clicking on this episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can leave a comment, a rating, whatever, at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. And you can stay up to date as to what is happening in North Carolina politics at our website, wunc.org. For Jerry, I'm Jeff. Have a great weekend.